Hello and welcome to Inside Education, the program and podcast for teachers, policymakers, and anyone with an interest in teaching and learning. I'm Sean Delaney, and you can download podcasts of previous editions by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the podcasts tab. This week, I bring you the first of a two-part interview with Ciarán Gray, a primary teacher with a passion for teaching and for dance. Ciarán teaches in the North Bay Educate Together National School in Kilbarrick in Dublin. He holds a master's degree in dance from the University of Limerick, and in 2008 he established Company B, a contemporary dance company exclusively for young males. When I met up with Ciarán, I first asked him what dance education involves in primary or post-primary school.
It's something that has fallen uncomfortably between stools, between being an art form and being involved in the PE curriculum and being situated in the PE curriculum. So my take on dance would be very much that it's the dance that I do is an art form, or is that it is taking ideas and notions and things and abstracting them into symbols that are expressed by the body. So those sort of descriptions and those things tend to lean more towards the visual arts, towards that thing where you take symbols and you manipulate them and so on. However, I'm aware that it tends to sit more comfortably in the PE curriculum, so that there's this being constant pull. And I suppose in my own practice, I'm always working at that, sort of like when I'm making dances, the constant question running in my head, is it art, or is it, you know, does it express anything? Does it have anything to say? And those questions. So I'm always sort of hoping that maybe it's not just dance routines, because I started out doing jazz dance and there were no pretensions to ideas or that. It was just you heard a piece of music that you liked and you made up a routine to it. And I made a piece recently with my dance company about jazz guitarist Django Reinhardt. I can't remember how I came across him. I had a CD. I just bought a CD, a double CD of him years ago. And he played in this Hot Club de France in Paris and with Stefan Grappelli. And he had just this amazing reputation as just this virtuoso jazz guitarist. And he made this amazing music, but he only had two fingers on his left hand that worked as a result of an accident, when he was 18, which everybody said, you know, he's written off, he'll never play the guitar. And he was already a virtuoso player at that stage, but with grim determination and tenacity or whatever, he became this fantastic jazz player and guitar player. And I loved the sound of his music, and I thought, I want to make a piece. Then it was the challenge to make it into something that would reflect aspects of his life and not just be little dance routines that were done to his music. So I suppose when I come to dance education with teachers or with children in school, it's that thing where you're constantly looking for an idea, something that can be transmuted, that can be transformed and metamorphosed into a dance from a notion rather than just a dance routine.
So could you give us an example maybe of something you did with school children where you actually take that notion and transfer it or transmute it into dance?
Probably one of the most satisfying ones I did over a few years, I did a thing in my school of a dance day where we would have just a celebration of dance in the school. And each year I would take a different theme. And one of the years we just took water. So you say, okay, well, you know, in the old days of creative dance, there would be a tendency to say, oh, well, you know, sort of you're a river, sort of lie on the floor and just roll along and be, you know, or your waves breaking on the shore and that. And I don't tend to subscribe to that type of creative dance. I tend to sort of say, well, you know, fine, waves are a fantastic image, you know, but the way that they maybe start sort of flat and that they rise and they rush forward and that then there's a crescendo and then that there's a retreat and that. So it'll be a case of looking at say waves in that thing. So we took the theme of water and we looked at it, how we could approach it, and we did things like water sports. We looked at creatures that lived in water or lived in the sea and the different types of movement that they would have. We looked at verbs and adjectives to describe. So we came up with words for like splash and flow and things like that. So we sort of looked at creating movements that would interpret those words. So there were different aspects, and then each of those fed into a section of the dance. And what was the nice sort of thing about it was that I came up with a template So each dance, I did it with third class, fourth class and fifth class, and they each made a dance following exactly the same template, but each used a different piece of music. And because they were each interpreting the task differently, none of the dances looked the same. They were all constructed to the same template. I found that over the years that if it's just the creative stuff that the children make, it sometimes maybe lacks a little bit of cohesion, but that if the dance practitioner can have one or two little choreographed bits, so you have creative generated by the children, then maybe a little choreographed piece that pulls it together for a moment or sort of puts a shape on it and then sends them off into other groups to show another aspect of the thing, it tends to make the overall dance have a certain cohesion that it might not otherwise have.
You have obviously a very strong background in dance because you studied jazz dance and you did a master's in University of Limerick. But for most teachers, they wouldn't have such a background in dance when it would come to teaching it. So if they were to scale down what you did, say, over the number of years and, you know, having the dance day to an individual lesson, what might that look like in the classroom?
Well, I'm really glad you said scale down rather than dumb down, because that would be the temptation to dumb it down. But it is the challenge that I would say that my understanding, my concept of dance is based on every piece of dance that I've seen since I started watching dance at the age of 19 or 20, you know, and that it's a synthesis of all those, what I like, what I don't like, what interests me, what I can respect but don't really find that interesting. So you can't just make up for time. You can't sublimate all that and, you know, transfer it. So what I end up doing a lot of the time is sort of giving what I call my bag of tricks, which are some simple devices which can be adapted, hopefully, by teachers. Like there's one simple activity. I have an alpha bod, and it's just a drawing of a person's body, but different parts of the body have letters associated with them. So if you were doing a dance and you wanted to have something from history, say you were doing the Vikings, you could take the word longship and then sort of find which parts of the body the letters go with, and then they could make movements. And that could be juxtaposed then with maybe movements that children think of when they think of Vikings, either sort of leaping over the sides of ships or running into whatever, you know. So scaling down and giving simple tricks, simple devices that can be used and reused and reused, you know, because each time the content that's being put into these devices or the way they're being used is slightly different. The theme is slightly different, so the product is slightly different. That's the hope.
I mean, what's interesting to me is before we started talking now even, I would always have said, well, the starting point for dance is always going to be a piece of music. Mm. But you've already dispelled that idea that it actually can be much broader.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, when I did the dance days over the number of years with the school, the first thing was the theme. And then which activities, which of my own bag of tricks and like these are not my bag of tricks really. These are ones that I've gotten from other people and from doing workshops way back. And most dance teachers and drama teachers are magpies. They just see something and go, oh, I'm gonna steal that. That I just love that. I'm gonna use that. You know, so you take it and then you sort of think, oh well, I might just use it this way. You know, you tweak it or to your own personal taste. But yeah, the first thing would be the idea, what the dance is going to be about, which activities we're going to use to generate that. And then I would, like in the dance days, so I'd have three classes and I'd sort of just choose a different piece of music for each. And again, too, it's fascinating because a thing I've done on occasion with group children or teenagers is taught them, we've made a dance and then we've tried it with one piece of music and then tried it with a totally different piece of music. And it does change. It does change. It can change the dynamics of it. You know, you find yourself almost reading something differently into it. It affects you differently, you know.
Imagine, Ciarán, you're in a school and you're looking in, say, the window of a classroom, and you're seeing something going on there that it could be dance, but it could be maybe gymnastics, or it could be athletics, or it could be drama. Mm. How do you decide that, oh no, what's going on there is dance? What are the essential elements of a dance lesson?
I saw this ad on television, I don't know what, maybe the 80s, 90s, and it was the most beautiful black and white film of these maybe South American children running around the quadrangle of what might have been an old abbey or monastery. And it's just beautiful. They're in bare feet and shorts, and they're just running with this sense of absolute joy. It might be in slow motion, and then at the end it just comes up, movement is an end in itself. Just do it. As an ad for Nike. And I thought, it kind of sums up my philosophy. So, you know, while we have all these aspirations of, you know, sort of that dance can be used to express ideas, but dance can be used to just for the sheer pleasure of movement. And, you know, and there are things that I use in my workshops or in my class, you know, that are just, they explore different types of movement. So we tend to think of steps, but in dance class or in a session, you might use swings and twists and falls and rises and those things. And some of that vocabulary, movement vocabulary, might not be that familiar. I would shy away from pigeonholing things. Is it dance? Maybe. You know, somebody once said to me, you know, when I was starting a company, being the boys' dance company, I was sort of saying, would you not call it movement? Because dance might scare people. We'll call it dance, you know, because we're a boys' dance company that works in dance house, and we do dance, you know.
Yeah, and I want to find out a bit more about that company. But first of all, going back to my misconception, could it be the case that you could have a dance lesson with no music in it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I have music that I've been using for 20, 25 years, just certain songs that I use, particularly for warm-up and that, but some I just, you know, I just really enjoy using this, and a lot of the tunes I use, I've been using for a very long time, and I'm comfortable with them, and every once in a while I think, oh, you know, I should, something different. But a lot of the activities can be done just as easily, you know. And it can be quite fascinating too, just to do it in silence, because people tend to find their own way of tuning into each other and find their own dynamics and that, you know.
And is it always kind of this fluid movement or this spontaneous movement, as opposed to, say, teaching the children maybe folk dance or, you know, more structured dances?
The dance curriculum sort of has room for all the different types of dance, and I think that in schools people do the dance that they're most comfortable with. So somebody who's very comfortable with Irish dancing or folk dancing, that, you know, or line dancing, it became very popular for a while, and I know there was a lot of it being done in schools, and I think that a little bit of it all, you know, like, I mean, I was at a drama festival many years ago in Wexford, and one of the activities that was held in the evening was line dancing, and it's the one and only time I've ever done line dancing, and I just enjoyed it so much. And it was just because I'm used to learning sequences, I found it very easy to remember the sequences.
And for parents who maybe didn't do dance themselves in school, how would the dance as you envisage it in primary school be different from, say, the Irish dancing lessons or the ballet lessons that people might do after school?
A couple of times I've done a show in my school where I've sort of made dance pieces, and we've done little films, and I've done a play with the teachers, so it's been a mixed bag. And I invited the woman who is the cleaner in the school, a fantastic character, and she's been cleaning my room in the school for 15, 16 years. We have great chats. And I gave her a ticket to come along, you know. And she's a straight-talking woman, no nonsense about her. And I also said, did you enjoy it, Alice? And she went, I didn't think much of the dance. And I said, you were expecting sort of like some nice routines. And I said, yeah, you know. And her experience would be of children sort of getting out on stage and dancing to a particular tune. And they would, you know, there'd be 10 or 12 or 15 of them all doing roughly the same, or maybe half of them doing one thing and then another group running on. And these dances were generated. They were dances using the templates, and that year they weren't neat little routines, you know. There is a quandary there, which is, the dance that children should be doing in school is about the joy of participation. It's about the experience of moving. It's about being involved. It's not necessarily about performance. And once you introduce performance, there's a whole other set of criteria come into play, which is of polishing and having to repeat something until maybe some of the pleasure and some of the initial enjoyment and freedom of it, you know. So maybe one person has a way of doing a particular section which feels fantastic in their body but makes them look very different to what other people are doing, and that they, in order for performance to look well, that needs to be curtailed. And that's the nature of performance. That's the nature that things have to be quantified and you know, homogenized, you know, for performance. And sometimes that loses things.
When children are learning dance, how much of the routines or how much of the the movement comes from the children themselves and how much is imposed or suggested by the teacher?
It varies from context to context. Again, when I was making the piece about Django Reinhardt, I had a particular choreographer, French choreographer. Her work I love, and the first piece I sort of thought, okay, I love this, this is a great piece of music, and I read up a little bit about him, and it turns out that he was very good at stealing chickens when he was a child. So the first piece was about him stealing chickens, you know, and I very much choreographed that, created shapes and sort of patterns, and that's, and that was close to being a routine. So I had my little argument with myself, well, is that all I'm doing? Am I just making a routine, or does the dance have an idea that it's portraying, you know? But then we did a lovely one called Two Fingers of Lightning, which was just about the speed at which his fingers moved on the fretboard of the guitar. So I showed them video. There's some video on YouTube, and they looked at the videos and they saw the way his fingers moved, and we looked at the shape of a fretboard, and the some of them would know guitar and that you know, in order to make chords and in order to get notes, that there's dexterity in that. So they then created patterns as though the floor of the dance studio was the fretboard of the guitar. So it was very linear, and there were sort of jumping across, like they never pretended there were strings there, but they became the fingers that were jumping sideways and up and down the fretboard and that. And they created patterns to another piece of music. And like nobody watching that dance would say, ah, yes, they're pretending to be fingers on the fretboard of a guitar. But even after they'd done the task, I suppose they even forgot that that's what it was, you know. And sometimes during rehearsal, say, well, remember where this idea came from. I mentioned earlier on the idea of abstracting, so you don't want to be totally literal and say, oh, well, you know, you can't move over there because fingers wouldn't be able to do that, you know. You've abstracted, you're taking an idea and you're stretching it all out of shape, but the initial idea is there as the stimulus and that. So that would have been very much generated by them. That was just sort of an interlude in the middle. And then the last piece was partly choreographed by me. And then they looked at images of Django and photographs and so on. And they made up phrases based on the shape of the guitar. They made up little sort of movement phrases. And I watched those, I videoed those, and I kind of looked and I said, okay, this section here. And I created choreography using their movements and found ways to sort of move from one movement into the other. I sort of sewed them together, you know. So it was a blend.
And how long did you work with these people on this sequence?
It was a 7-minute piece in total, and we worked sort of every Saturday for over 7 weeks, 7 Saturdays. Would have been working for about an hour and a half.
And what age were they?
These are all teenagers now. When they first joined the company, they were in 3rd or 4th class, but one of them is now in college, and in his second year in college, and 2 or 3 others are in their first year in college. So it's been a while.
So you mentioned earlier Company B. What exactly is that?
I decided to go down and do a master's. I did a 1-year diploma sort of down in UL in dance, and then sort of went on to a master's thesis. And I chose as my question or as my theme, boys don't dance. I heard one of the children in my class, actually, I heard one day a boy saying, boys don't dance. And I went, oh, that's good, you know. So the question was, do boys dance, or can they, or what are the things that militate against boys? So that was the subject of my thesis, and looking at the sport oriented culture, homophobia, fear of being different, you know, just a whole range of notions of masculinity, different types of masculinity and so on. Just, it was endlessly, I could have gone on reading around it forever, you know. As soon as I had that done, I looked at the thing, boys don't dance, and I approached Dance Ireland, Paul Johnson, chief executive in there, and just sort of said, I have this idea, I want to start a boys contemporary dance company. He went, yep, we'll support you in that. So I just set out to disprove my own thesis, my own statement of boys don't dance. And the idea was to just make dance as normal. And I remember there was one boy who was a big lad, and I remember seeing him in an after-school dance class one Thursday, and him just standing there. He was bigger than all, and all around him were these little girls, and he just looked miserable, and he just looked ill at ease. And he came along and joined Company B. And he was a great member for a good few years and that, you know, and he never looked uncomfortable, and he wasn't the most graceful, but he was at ease there. I felt that there was a need for some positive discrimination, that you would sort of have an environment where it was safe to be a boy, to safe to be moving. And then what I found was that some boys left and decided I've had enough of that, or, you know, and then others would come along, and mostly through word of mouth. But what would happen was new members would come in. There wasn't the adjustment, so there wasn't that. It seemed like they looked and went, well, they're all doing this and it seems to be normal. So what you grow up with becomes the norm, you know. So they tended to blend in really fast and just go with the flow. I mean, I don't know there was any great resistance at the start, but new members just seemed to blend in quite easily, you know.
And at what age do boys begin to get these messages about masculinity or about dance, that it suddenly becomes, they become more self-conscious about participating?
Well, I targeted third and fourth class, and I think that's probably where it starts to become most marked. You know, in my reading, it was interesting because one of the things was that there are versions of masculinity and that it's very much a performed thing, and that while we think of girls being concerned with appearance and wanting, you know, that in terms of socializing and that various researchers had found that actually boys were very much at pains to fit in and not to break the mold and not to stand out, that it was important to be in with the mass, you know, not to draw attention to yourself and not to do anything that was too, unless you were incredibly well self-possessed and confident in that, and that it required very particular individuals to be that, you know, centered and that sure of themselves. I mean, I used to give the example that if a boy sort of came into school and said, I don't have some of my homework done. I had football practice. I was late home and I was tired. And, you know, my mum said I should go to bed. In many schools, that would be kind of, you know, not that unusual, an excuse. If a boy came into class and said, I was at my dance practice last night and I didn't get my homework done, I'm not sure that it wouldn't at least draw some comment, you know, or it'd be very unusual for a boy to be able to say that.
Does a film like Billy Elliot help?
I love Billy Elliot. I love the stage show, actually. I really enjoyed the stage show. I don't know if I mentioned it in my thesis, but I remember seeing Germaine Greer on some panel show and her just, like, you know, why did he have to go to the Royal Ballet? Because it was just such a, I don't know, it's a cliche, but it was, you know, it might have been grittier, you know, because there are fantastic dance companies, male dance companies up in the north of England.
And what ages are the boys in Company B?
Well, at the moment, they're probably about 15 to 20. For most of the 10 years I did every Saturday during term time, which, you know, after 7 or 8 years was a bit tiring. So for the last year, we've just been doing 7-week projects. We do 7 Saturdays and then take a few weeks off and then do another. So we're in the middle of one at the moment. But after Halloween, I'm going to do a 5-week project. I'm going out to some primary schools. I'm going to do some short taster sessions with third and fourth class, maybe fifth class boys. And I'm hoping to get maybe 15 to 20 sort of third to fifth class boys. And we're going to do a 5-week project. And we're going to revive the first piece that Company B did in 2009. It was a Pirate Fantasia, I called it. It was a piece using music by Hans Zimmer from Pirates of the Caribbean. I loved the music. So the dance is, I think there's 4, maybe 5 sections in the dance, but they're not typical of what you would imagine. There's no swashbuckling, there are no sword fights. So one section is just giving that feeling of ships rising and falling on waves. There's one of pirates and just there's a swaggering. But then there's one where the fear that would go through a village or a town if there were pirates attacking. So you have people in panic, and it's a panic dance. And then the following one is kind of beautiful because it's really slow, and what happens is it's like people who ran away and hid come back to help those that were victims. And then you just have the boys doing these very tender and very slow sort of movements of lifting, you know, people up off the ground and reassuring them and sort of helping them, so on. And it's quite funny because colleagues of mine from my school, when they saw it, they found themselves getting choked up, because you just don't tend to see boys in those very sort of nurturing, caring roles in dance. So we're going to revive that and try and teach it over 5 Saturdays.
Are there many other all-male dance companies in Dublin or in Ireland?
To date, Company B has been the pioneer. But there is a group down in the Firk and Crane Centre in Cork now. They started up just towards the end of last school year, and they were getting a boys group going there. And then a friend of mine who works up in Northern Ireland, she had a group of all boys as well, and they sort of did testers in schools and that, and they only had a small number, and actually we got four of them came down to visit us just at the end of June. We are the longest established, but there is this little project up in Belfast, which apparently they had a bit of a setback. The main teacher had a disc problem in his back and wasn't able to teach, but they've gotten they're going along. I haven't heard from the group in Cork, so there may be three little groups at the moment.
What do you see as the educational benefits for boys in particular, but for boys and girls, of taking part and participating in dance?
As a school teacher, one of my big things is of letting children peep through windows at possibilities and things and kind of going, here's the thing, you know, you might not like it, but you might. I've been intrigued that, you know, parents of these boys have gone along to see dance programs as a result of us performing in platforms where there would be other youth dance groups. So I suppose certain performance arts are quite, not necessarily elitist, but they would have a smallish following. I mean, I only realised a few years ago, well, 10 years or more, I stopped doing dance for a year or two and just went and played basketball. And I suddenly realised that all the people that I was playing basketball, none of them ever went to the plays or never went to dance performances. It was quite an eye-opener to realise, oh yeah, that people move in circles that of interest and that. So I suppose broadening circles of interest would be a thing that they would say, and in years to come, you know, I was never the aim to make professional dancers, although two of the boys are kind of mooching around the idea of being professional dancers, which was never the thing. It was, as I said, to make dance normal, not to be afraid of it, to feel like, yeah, this is something I can do. And some of them have come back and said that in transition year they've done the musical, and like the choreographer has come in and gone, how come you're learning this so fast? Why are you finding this so easy, learning the choreography? You know, I'm in a dance company. You know, it's not a problem. You know.
And are there opportunities there for people who want to pursue it professionally?
That's a tricky one, because I have a parent of one of the boys who's kind of going, oh, come on, let's be realistic. You know, it could be a hobby, it could be an interest, but it's not a proper career. You know, and I don't know. I mean, I was lucky that teaching was what I wanted to do. But, There's years of training, and then there's hit and miss sort of amounts of work and that, you know. There's this, like actors, there's a good deal of resting time, you know. But people who do dance, some of them become teachers and some of them become choreographers, so they generate their own work and they create their own possibilities.
And that opinion about working options for dancers from Kieran Gray brings this week's Inside Education to a close. To download over 300 Inside Education podcasts, go to seandelaney.com and click on podcasts. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, is available from all good online bookshops and libraries. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.